So good morning, everyone. This is Chair Rena Moran, pursuant to House Rule 10.01. I call the remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. The clerk would take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo? Representative Garofalo?
I'm in the meeting.
Representative Albright? Representative Albright? Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
Present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Yes.
Kreisha, present. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Liebling, present. Representative Lilly? Representative Lilly? Representative Mariani?
Present.
Mariani, present. Representative Marquardt?
Present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller?
Present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash?
Present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill?
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Petersburg? Representative Petersburg? Representative Pinto?
Present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher, excused. Representative Schultz?
Present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott?
Present.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin?
Present.
Sundin, present. Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright? Representative Lilly? Representative Petersburg? That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Thank you, Ms. Sparkman. So a quorum is present. So our next agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Monday, February the 1st. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by the committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes for February the 1st, 2020. Please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you, Ms. Olson. Representative Olson, sorry about that. So members, we're going to make a change to the agenda order and take up House File 445 last. It is my understanding that there is still some work to be done on the bill to reach a potential bipartisan agreement. That is our hope to be able to do that. So we're going to start discussing the bill today, but not take any votes on it. I originally changed this hearing to an 8:30 start time to ensure that we had enough time to fully debate the bill before taking a vote. So I want to thank all of you so much for your flexibility, and hopefully we can move through our agenda a little quicker now. So instead, we're going to start with a few bills we have received from the Environment and Natural Resources Committee that are ready to move to the floor. Our first bill up will be House File 133. Chair Becca Finn, would you like to move your bill and tell us about it?
Yes, I will move my bill, House File 133. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is, if folks will remember, every year we have the DNR lands bill. Essentially, any land bought or sold by the state that's on riparian water, you know, near water, needs to be approved by the legislature. And so this is that annual bill, but it is last year's version of the bill. We had bipartisan support last year, and essentially it was one of those policy things that didn't move forward and got slowed down because of the pandemic and things being disrupted. Was on track to get done, but did not. But my Senate author is Senator Rood over in the Senate, and the fiscal impact is actually a gain of $34,000 from some tax forfeited land that would be sold. The impacted counties are St. Louis, Cass, and Lake of the Woods, and Wadena. And I'm happy to take any questions about further details, but there's no actual cost. It's actually funds coming in from the sale of some property.
That's awesome. Members, do you have any questions? All right.
Madam Chair.
Okay, who we have? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Becker-Finn, thanks for bringing this forward. My recollection is that we previously actually voted on this in this committee last session. Number one, is that correct? And number two, are there any changes since the last time we voted on this?
Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. It's the same bill that we passed last year and just kind of got hung up at the end of session. But yes, this has passed and passed easily in the last committee as well, and hopefully on track in the Senate too.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, are there any other questions? If there are no further questions, Chair Becca Finn renews her motion that House File 133 be recommended for placement on the general register. The clerk would take the roll. Well, we won't do that, right? There's no.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. We for any final votes, we will need to take a roll.
You need to take a roll? Okay. So, Ms. Sparkman, would you please take the roll?
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright, excused. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly, excused. Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg, excused. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher, excused. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sandeen, aye. 25 ayes, 0 nays.
So there being 25 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 133 is recommended for placement on the General Register. Thank you so much, Chair Beckerfin. So we're going to move on to House File 30. Chair Hansen, the next two bills are yours. I understand you have an author's amendment for the bill. If you would like to move the bill and give us some information about it, we can move the amendment afterwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would move House File 30, First Engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Members, House File 30 is the 2020 LCCMR bill. Much like the bill that we just passed, there are a number of environment bills that will be coming to you. The phrase I've been using is we can't go back to the buffet until we've cleaned the plate from last year. And there's a number of these bills that were held up in an omnibus bill that was not passed. And so this bill is the 2020 LCCMR, or the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. I do have an amendment, Madam Chair, clarifying amendment. If I could move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Please move. Yeah. Have you explained the amendment? I'm sorry, Chair.
Madam Chair, the A4 amendment, there's a provision in the bill where, if you remember last year, wastewater treatment issues were one of their first delays for the bill. And as an effort at compromise, we had included energy demonstration grants on wastewater treatment plants, which there's a model for that. For example, the Metropolitan Council has installed solar on wastewater treatment plants and can reduce energy at those plants. And so this would be a grant, and the way it's written, it looks like the Public Facilities Authority would be administering the grants. It will actually be the LCCMR in consultation with the Public Facilities Authority. So that's what the amendment does. It clarifies that it's the PFA, Public Facilities Authority, is in consultation with them.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Is there any question to the amendment, to the A4 amendment? Okay. So Chair Hansen renews his motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. Okay, is there any further discussion on the bill? Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, if you could just briefly highlight, I think there's a diversity of opinion on this this bill, but I suspect the conflict is primarily over what is not in the bill versus what is in the bill. Can you just briefly remind members of the committee what that dispute is?
Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. So this is the 2020 LCCMR bill. It appropriates $61.387 million in FY21 from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Majority of the bill includes projects tentatively selected by the LCCMR. However, there is funding for projects because of a project cancellation, and for it does not include wastewater treatment grants. It does not include a portion for actually dealing with the pipes and retrofitting. So members, as we went through the process last year, that was the conflict on wastewater treatment. When we began negotiations with the Senate, that actually no longer became the sticking point. What became the sticking point is that this bill, as well as all the other environment bills, whether they were policy or finance, were tied up because the Senate wanted first the clean car standard to be dropped, then to be delayed 4 years, and then delayed 2 years. So those provisions are, there's nothing in this bill about the clean car standard, and that was ultimately what delayed it. This bill was introduced in, I think, 4 subsequent special sessions after closure, trying to move this forward. I don't know, Representative Garofalo, is that enough detail for you?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Yes, just I just wanted members to be aware that there is that dispute. I suspect in my caucus there's a diversity of opinion on this issue. So while I'll be...
Okay. Are there any other questions for Chair Hansen on the bill?
Madam Chair, can you hear me or not?
I can hear you, Representative Garofalo.
Okay, so I just wanted to thank the author for bringing the bill forward. And again, I'll be voting no on the bill today, but I suspect that there's a diversity of opinion in our caucus. So thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Any further discussion as amended?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill had her hand up.
Pardon me, Chris?
Representative O'Neill had her hand up.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I'm to understand this correctly, and I'm asking Representative Hansen this question since he's the author, previously the House and the Senate Republicans were asking for $1.5 million to go to PFA so that we could actually take care of folks' water infrastructure. And instead, you've chosen to do a renewable energy project instead. And can you tell me why you've chosen to do renewable energy instead of actually fix the pipes? Seems like a logical thing to, if you want clean water, to fix leaking pipes and sewer pipes and things that flow sewer into the streams and in our lakes. And I'm just wondering, why would you choose to do renewable energy projects over actually fixing leaky pipes?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. The reasons are precedent, the Constitution, and the lack of an actual recommendation from the LCCMR on this. In terms of precedent, the LCCMR has provided funds for energy. That's been one of the components of it. But in terms of actual wastewater treatment projects, we have done research, but not the capital projects. If you remember back in October, we funded about $300 million in bonding for capital wastewater projects. So there is a traditional source of funding for capital projects. If we go way back to the initiation of the Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund, and there's an amazing book called Mr. Environment about former Representative Willard Munger, there was quite extensive debate about not having wastewater treatment projects, capital projects, in this fund for the purpose of, because it would eat up the whole fund. The need was there, and that there's already a traditional source of funding for that. So there was, in that constitutional language, the ability for loans. And over the past several years, we've provided funds, I think in the 2019 bill, loan money rather than actual grant money. So what happened in the 2020 cycle? Through the LCCMR, we request RFPs. There was not an RFP, a response to an RFP for wastewater treatment. It actually came in at the end of the selection process with a motion to just, there was no project. The PFA did not testify in support of any project. There was no proposal. It was just an appropriation for the money that was moved, and a majority passed. Because a majority passed it, it takes a supermajority to make a recommendation. So there was no recommendation because, frankly, many members of the LCCMR, not the majority, but many, enough to deny a recommendation, said that this type of thing was not appropriate, both the actual appropriation and the method in which it was passed. So we went through the whole process last year. There was the dispute, and it seems that as we went through negotiation, the Senate moved past that dispute and was focused more on that. In an effort for an olive branch with wastewater treatment, we added the renewable energy. This bill passed out of our committee with Representative Heinzman's vote 17-2.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So let's move on to another point. I mean, it's just, to me, it seems rather illogical that you wouldn't actually fix leaking sewer pipes and put in better infrastructure for sewer and water, you want clean water. But that be, you know, whatever, politics is a nutty place and a nutty game. So there's also the outstanding issue of the California car emission standard, which apparently the governor is going to continue to move forward, which will cost anyone that wants to buy a car, according to two different standards, either $1,000 more per car, or the industry themselves have said $2,000 more per car because of this implementation of the California car emission standard. And yet that is still moving forward, and so is this bill. So I'm confused. What exactly has been compromised? Because apparently Republicans are doing all the compromise. I'm not really sure what's happening in this bill, but can you explain what's happening with the California car emission standard with the Walz administration? And if this was held up last time because of that, why is it not being, why is anyone agreeing to this now? What was the agreement, Chair Hansen?
Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the clean car standard, there's nothing in this bill about the clean car standard. There was nothing in the lands bill about the clean car standard. There's nothing in the upcoming dry cleaner bill about the clean car standard. There was nothing in a whole host of other bills that were tied up because the Senate decided to leverage the clean car standard against passage of that. In this bill, there are about 200, 220 jobs. Some of those are at the Minnesota Terrestrial Invasives Institute, which provides groundbreaking research on agricultural issues such as the soybean aphid, buckthorn, and the interaction between those two pieces. So I think also outdoor programming like the Prairie Sportsman television program and Pioneer Public Television, those programs have been cut because we did not pass this bill. About 3 weeks ago, you may have seen in the Star Tribune, both Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Rood said that they supported moving forward with this bill because it was time. So what we're trying to do is separate out these provisions that have broad bipartisan support. Let the arguing continue on the clean car standards, which will be interesting now, by the way, because General Motors and most of the car manufacturers have made a commitment to adopt the California clean car standards. But there's nothing in this bill on it. It's an unprecedented connection with it. So I'm asking the committee, as I will ask on the floor of the House, to move forward on what we can agree on. And what we can agree on here is that this bill, which is the people of Minnesota voted on the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And we've waited too long on passing this bill, and I'd ask to move forward so that we can meet those commitments and help work on the research and the projects that are in this bill that make sense for Minnesotans.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'll be a no today. I mean, an olive branch of solar energy, I don't even know what that means. So that's an unusual way to come to an agreement. And then the California car standards, emission standards, are relevant. Everything is relevant. Everything's a moral document. Don't you remember that? This is a moral document. And it's immoral to insist on the California emission standards, which will increase for anyone wanting to buy a car between $1,000 and $2,000 per car, regardless of what the car industry is doing. The people that actually sell the cars have to buy the cars to sell the car to you, still have to buy them, and there may or may not be a market. Those that sell cars say there is not a market for those cars, so they're going to be stuck with those cars. And unfortunately, the legislature has very little say on what the Walz administration is currently doing to implement the California car emission standards. So while this might have some agreement, I'm not in agreement because I think that you should have adopted something, at least loans or something, to do more PFA. PFA is incredibly important, and the olive branch of solar means nothing to me. So for me, I'm a no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any further questions? Okay, well, two things. I was glad to hear, Chair Hansen, that this bill will create 220 jobs. I think where we are right now in the pandemic, to have to create these possibilities to put people back to work is an awesome thing. And again, this bill has nothing to do with the car emission standards. So in saying that, Chair Hansen renews his motion that House File 30, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general register. The clerk would take the roll. Ms. Faulkner.
Chair Moran.
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright, excused. Representative Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan.
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas, excused. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly, excused. Representative Mariani.
Aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller.
No.
Miller, no. Representative Nash.
No.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor.
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill.
No.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher, excused. Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott.
Nope.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. 17 ayes, 8 nays.
Well, there have been 17 ayes and 8 nays. The motion prevails. House File 30, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. So, Chair Hansen, just sit still. We have another bill for you. Your second bill is House File 91. I understand you have an author's amendment for this bill. So, would you like to move the bill before the committee and tell us a little bit about it, and we'll go to the amendment afterwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would move that House File 91, first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Members, House File 91 deals with dry cleaners, and this is another provision that we actually had an agreement on with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Senate, the House, and the Dry Cleaners Association. The challenge with dry cleaners has been that cleanup for sites with dry cleaners, when the dry cleaner reimbursement program was set up almost 30 years ago, there were over 300 dry cleaners. Now there are fewer than 100. So to make the system work, it's been very difficult. And we tried to, we had a better agreement in May last year, but because of the blockage of getting any of the environment bills done, we are coming here again with House File 91. And what this bill does, which passed unanimously out of our committee, is it provides help to dry cleaners using the existing fiscal year funds. So that's important. We're not making any commitments in the tails. There's funds that were appropriated in 2019, and we are reappropriating them for a couple of different purposes. So first off, the dry cleaner fund is used to reimburse for cleanup of sites. So the dry cleaners pay for their cleanup, and then they get reimbursed for the state. So if there's no money in the account, they don't get reimbursed, and they're carrying that cost with them. So there currently is $213,000 in the dry cleaner account. So the first portion of this bill appropriates that to those owner operators to clean up those sites. We had a $600,000 appropriation that was looking at trying to determine the legal liability and insurance policies. So there was a study that was done. Of that study, there's $255,000 that is left in FY21. The bill as it's written, we had some challenges with how to describe that. So the A4 amendment describes it cleaner in terms of how that can be done. So the amendment makes it a little more logical and cleaner in terms of how the appropriation is done. So $255K from the previous appropriation will go towards cost share, the model that we often use in agriculture, cost share for the dry cleaners to convert their equipment to not use perchloroethylene. There is a ban on perchloroethylene. We have extended the ban date out because of COVID to try to give time for those companies, and then we're providing cost share to do that. In addition, in FY21, there was, and this also took a while to determine how much money was in the remediation account. So we are taking $100,000 that was on the bottom line from the remediation account in FY21. That gives a total of $355K cost share for equipment to change off of perchloroethylene to meet that ban. So we're trying to ensure that we're not having any more contamination and that we're cleaning up the contamination now. We're asking to move this bill quickly because we're using FY21 dollars. Obviously, there's not that many of us that are using dry cleaners right now, but if you're a dry cleaner and you're waiting to be reimbursed, this bill is a lifesaver because it gets cash in your hand for that money that you've already expended. So with that, I would ask for your support for the amendment.
Thank you for that thorough explanation of the bill, Chair Hansen. Chair Hansen, would you like to move the A4 amendment and tell us what it does?
I would move the A4 amendment, and what it essentially does, it clarifies everything that I just said into a one-page format. So it's a good legal language.
All right. Are there any questions for Chair Hansen? Okay. If there's no other questions, Chair Hansen renews his motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. If there isn't any further discussion to this bill as amended, clarity? Okay. Seeing none. Chair Hansen.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I was just going to say, I don't know if there was any further questions on the bill.
Representative Garofalo, do you have a question?
No questions, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for your work on this. I'll be supporting your bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Any questions? Seeing none, Chair Hansen renews his motion that House File 91, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general register. The clerk would take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, aye.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright, excused. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas, excused. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha? Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher, excused. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. 25 ayes, 1 nay.
So there have been 25 ayes and 1 nay. The motion prevails. House File 91, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Chair Hansen, for both of those bills. So we're going to move on to House File 445. As I mentioned at the beginning of the hearing, we are not going to take any votes on this bill today, but I would like to begin the discussion about it, including any amendments that we are interested in offering. My hope is that this conversation allow us to identify where work is still needed to reach a consensus, and that we can come back together later this week to move something to the floor that has a broader agreement. Chair Mariani, would you like to walk us through your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Good morning. I apologize for interrupting, clearing my throat halfway through your presentation.
That was you. That's okay.
Madam Chair, members, House File 445 is a straightforward bill that meets the safety of all Minnesotans by creating a state contingency special revenue fund to provide funds to local public safety agencies, so police departments, sheriffs, et cetera, for managing large-scale public disturbances while ensuring that the constitutional rights of public protest is protected. The bill essentially asserts the twin realities of safety and rights, that both of those are important and must be guaranteed by the state. It also asserts that people being free from harm is a shared value across the state and that Minnesotans have a duty to keep one another safe. The bill was heard in the Public Safety Criminal Justice Reform Committee that I chair and passed to this committee after adopting four or five amendments that were presented. Having debated and voted on the policy content of the bill in the appropriate policy committee, it seems to me the primary focus for the Ways and Means Committee is the proposed transfer of $35 million from the general fund in this fiscal year into the special revenue fund to be used by the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety for the reimbursement program. So, members, here's a very quick rundown of the bill. As I stated, House File 445 creates a state contingency fund that's similar. I think of the present state disaster fund and how that works. It sets it up to reimburse. It's a reimbursement of design. Local governments, state agencies for critical public safety events that exhaust local resources to ensure safety and that requires mutual aid arrangements to do so. This applies where a state of emergency is declared or local emergency declared under state statute. As I mentioned, it creates a special revenue fund that's appropriate to the Department of Public Safety for the reimbursement costs designed. It establishes eligible criteria, including using eligibility, including overtime costs, costs for logistical needs, supplies, damaged, destroyed equipment, costs, and deaths, disability, or injury. It establishes a reimbursement rate for the receiving jurisdiction, and receiving here means the jurisdiction that is creating the design for a mutual aid arrangement. So think of where the event would be, you know, happening, and that local public safety entity would then reach out to other public, local public entities for assistance. So that's the receiving jurisdiction. There's a 75% reimbursement rate for their costs. There's a 100% reimbursement rate for the sending jurisdiction. So sending here would be those responding to that receiving, quote-unquote, receiving jurisdiction to provide aid. It establishes a process for reimbursement. There's an appeals process, audit requirements, and, of course, the $35 million transfer from the general fund. There are also there's also an after-action review in order to learn and adjust our practices so we can be increasingly effective at ensuring public safety, and dealing effectively with these kind of disturbances. There's language here that the Department of Public Safety Commissioner cannot be denied observing public safety responses by the receiving jurisdiction, and that the Public Safety Department's offer for advice cannot be prevented. It doesn't require following the advice. It merely makes sure that that advice can be presented to the receiving entity. Failure to do that may result, although it's not required, but may result in denial of reimbursement. It requires that all those who are licensed, the bill requires all those licensed by the Post Board, Peace Officer Standards Training Board, to be held accountable to their own department's public assembly policy, subject to state licensing action. This is commonly found in the code of conduct portion of individuals' licenses. So again, I really want to emphasize, members, that the language here is holding, using the state's licensing authority to hold those licenses, so these are individuals and CLIOs, chiefs, sheriffs, et cetera, accountable to their own department's existing public assembly policy. There's also a process that the bill calls for creating a statewide model policy for policing public assemblies. That will take time, and so there's a timeline set in the bill. The Post Board, the Peace Officer Standards Training Board is the one that will create this policy. They've done this in a number of other policy areas, most recently in the sexual assault investigation model policy. They'll have until the end of 21 to develop that model policy with a diverse group of stakeholders, including the three major police associations, law enforcement associations in the state. And then there's a requirement by March of next year that all agencies conform with that model policy. It would be their own local policy, but consistent with, so very similar to that model policy. Again, this is how we've done these model policies in the past. Finally, Madam Chair, some of the racial equity considerations in this bill is that it acknowledges the need, in light of the tremendous damage caused to posse communities, people of color, indigenous communities, including small businesses, by the violent events that followed the police killing of George Floyd last year. Those Minnesota communities deserve public safety responses that both protect them from harm and also protects their civil rights. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick rundown of the bill, and stand for any questions.
Well, thank you, Chair Mariani, for that thorough introduction of your bill. So, members, what I would like to do is start with questions about the underlying bill before we move to amendments. I believe we have Commissioner Harrington from the Department of Public Safety and Colonel Lager from the State Patrol on call if members have questions for either of them. So why don't we open up for any questions that members may have?
Madam Chair, the first question I see in line is Representative Petersburg.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to this bill, you know, in essence, it looks like it's providing some funding for a fund to use that with. The question I have is how did the funding and how did the reimbursement happen prior to this? And what are the differences in this bill that isn't involved in the procedures and policies we have today?
Chair Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Petersburg. Madam Chair, it's probably maybe best to call on the executive branch president to talk about the structure of prior and proposed.
Commissioner Harrington.
Madam Chair, John Harrington from the Department of Public Safety. If I could have the representative ask the question again so I can be clear about the question, that would be appreciated.
Okay. Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Harrington. The question was, because this really is dealing with the funding mechanisms for the treatment of police officers and so forth, how have we worked the funding in the past? In other words, the reimbursements for the police officers that are involved in the past, and how is this bill different than the procedures and policies that we currently have in place?
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, historically, in large-scale events, which is the kind of emergencies that this bill envisions, we have been either appropriated from the federal government funding for a lead agency to reimburse the local agencies that came in under mutual aid. So, for example, during the Republican National Convention, we were appropriated a $50 million grant to pay for the mutual aid equipment and supplies that agencies who came to St. Paul to assist the St. Paul Police Department. And so the St. Paul Police Department was the fiscal agent, and then they simply use that money based on contracts that were set up either through joint powers agreements or through mutual aid agreements to get individual departments paid. More recently, the last big event of this kind was the Super Bowl, frankly. And in that case, the city of Minneapolis, who had been the city that had asked for the Super Bowl, created a host committee. The host committee raised the funds. The city of Minneapolis was the fiscal agent for that, and departments that came forward to provide mutual aid during the Super Bowl were then paid out of that fund that the host committee created. In no other case that I am aware of have we had mutual aid that has gone on for the kind of duration that we saw during May and June of last year in the Twin Cities metro area. And so this fund is designed to address a gap that exists between a planned event such as the Super Bowl or a convention and an unplanned event where multiple agencies need to be pulled in for many days beyond the normal 24-hour cycle that mutual aid typically covers.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I guess the question then becomes, where did the reimbursement come from for last May and throughout this past year for those events, and what authority did the governor use in order to provide the funding for them? I mean, I'm just still unclear as to where the funding came in the past and why this is needed.
Commissioner Harrington.
Chair Moran, Representative Petersburg. The governor did not authorize funding for mutual aid for the May-June events. As I understand it, we were assisting the city of Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis would be responsible for the mutual aid. My understanding from Chief Arredondo is that the city then had to move money into the Minneapolis police budget to be able to pay those local agencies that are asking for reimbursement off of mutual aid back. So as far as I'm aware, the governor and the state has not paid any of those local departments for mutual aid. And when we have been asked about that, we have referred them to the city of Minneapolis.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'll just follow up with a comment then. It sounds like currently if a particular entity, whether it's a city or a county, needs extra help, they're responsible for that, which seems kind of logical to me because that is part of keeping their public safety there. So in this regard, it just seems that kind of makes more sense than to have a fund that doesn't have any kind of strings attached to it or has any kind of consequence for your own. So in other words, you could eliminate your police department. And then when you need help, go to this fund in order to pay for that help. So it just seems like it maybe is going in the opposite direction of what we really want for communities to provide their own public safety. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we had this bill come through public safety, it was interesting to me that both Commissioner Harrington and Colonel Langer both stated that this fund would not be used for state purposes. So in other words, State Patrol, DNR, DPS, other state agencies would not be using this because they have their own budgets and they could come to the state for a deficiency budget if they so choose, if they get to that point. But in the language of the bill, the problem I have with the language as it is right now is it does allow that the state could use this fund. And I could tell you right now that $35 million could dissipate and disappear in a heartbeat. What the DNR and State Patrol came to the legislature already for was, I know it was over 10, it was probably over $11 million, and this is only $35 million. So one of my issues, just one, is that the state could use this money. I think that's inappropriate. It has been described as a local law enforcement reimbursement, but if the state can take it, then it's not going to local law enforcement. So that's number one. That's a huge issue. And in the amendment that former Chair Johnson is bringing forward, that is one of the key components, not the only component, but it is a key component. The other thing is once the amendment went on in public safety, Chair Mariani's amendment, for me, it really muddled up what was actually reimbursed. It made it very confusing. It was kind of murky language. I'm not quite sure what it covered and what it didn't. I would ask that the language would go back to the original bill, which was very clear. It was incredibly clear what was covered, overtime, food and lodging, if their equipment was broken and destroyed for the responding agencies, all of that was incredibly clear. So I have those two issues. There are other issues there. But most importantly, if this is a local law enforcement reimbursement fund, then state agencies should not be taking money out of the fund. So that language absolutely needs to come out. Secondly, all of the additional language that was put in about other things that I'm not even sure what they mean could be reimbursed. It just seems like really anything in the kitchen sink could be thrown into that category and the fund would disappear very quickly. I know that Representative Johnson will have additional things that he's going to talk about. But for me, those are two of the absolute things that have to happen in this bill in order for us to come to any kind of agreement. So if this is the purpose of this hearing now, those are my two top critical things. Make sure that this is only for local law enforcement and make it very clear what we're reimbursing.
Thank you.
There's a couple other components. Thank you. Chair, there are a couple other components that Chair Johnson will be talking about, but I just wanted to get that on the record that those are absolutely critical. Thank you, Chair.
So who would like to respond to the state question around Dallas? Would that be you, Commissioner Harrington? Or?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, and then Carlos, you can follow up about the additional language.
Chair Moran, Representative O'Neill, in the original concept that we pushed forward for this bill, it was based out of conversations I had with local law enforcement who were being asked to come forward and assist in a multi-agency effort to keep the peace. And one of the questions they asked was, how would they be reimbursed? Because their city managers and their local city councils were asking them that question. And so we proposed this concept of a fund similar to the state emergency fund that we use for disasters that would cover extraordinary cost and extraordinary events. As such, we did not envision this as being a source for state agencies to receive funds. We certainly understand that this is that state agencies are being asked routinely to step in these days, probably far more often than we had ever seen before, into assisting local law enforcement and local CLIOs and sheriffs in keeping the peace. So that the language is such that state could do it, I certainly understand that. I certainly recognize that having to protect local jurisdictions using state patrol and DNR has caused an extraordinary drain on their budgets. But as you have said, we have then gone to the legislature to ask for deficiency funding to refill those budget holes. And we have been, at least from DPS, been very fortunate to be allowed to get those kind of funding activities taken care of. So our original intent here was to have a bill that would answer the questions for local law enforcement as to what source they could tap into in an extraordinarily large-scale event.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Chair Mariani?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And so in the second part of Representative O'Neill's statement, you know, quite frankly, it's really hard for me to respond to blanket statements of stuff in the kitchen sink. I didn't hear a reference to something. So let me just tell you what's in the eligibility cost so we can be clear in terms of focusing what's on the language in front of us. One is overtime costs. Two are the logistical needs. So you think about food and lodging. You're sending, you know, your officers from miles away. They're not at home. They need to eat. You know, they need to be able to take a nap. Incidental supplies that are necessary to the aid of the response. Backfill personnel costs incurred by the sending jurisdiction. Damage to equipment or equipment being destroyed, incurred by the sending jurisdiction, costs associated with emergency management, response to public health threats posed by the public safety event. I would remind members that we're in the midst of a worldwide pandemic that requires extensive use of PPEs in any public gathering. Imagine the incredible risk and burden that many of our peace officers will be incurring in multi-day events involving thousands, potentially thousands of people gathered in one space. And so it seems to me anyway that it's important that those individuals, our officers, receive public health protection. There's language that I added indemnifying sending a jurisdiction. I believe it's going to be an amendment to tighten that up a bit. That came at the request of the Sheriff's Association. There is a cost for the after-action review. Conducting a review will require some expenses. And then there's language here involving, and so you can imagine like a Moorhead, you know, you know, any of our border cities that might be facing something, you know, of the magnitude that this attempts to respond to, may call on jurisdictions across state lines. That happens actually quite frequently, members. Let's see. Yeah, so those are the main eight categories of costs, and it might be helpful to know which of those costs there is objection to, that, you know, perhaps, you know, there's some, you know, work that we can do on to get to agreement to. But you know, it's not a kitchen sink of issues, members. It's you know, very, very carefully thought through, primarily from a public safety professional perspective, of the actual costs that may be incurred. And while I, you know, Madam Chair, very quickly, while I have just a floor, just a few seconds, you know, I think part of, and I do appreciate Representative St. Petersburg question, because I think it really opens up for us the opportunity to face what, you know, may be an evolving dynamic that's happening across our nation, not just here, certainly here. And the commissioner alluded to it earlier. You know, the GOP convention, the Super Bowl, those are all planned events. They are large scale. They and because of that, they require mutual aid agreements in order to have the appropriate level of resources response, you know, to the need. What we're talking about here are unplanned events. And one of the things that worries me as just as a citizen, let alone as chair of the Public Safety Committee, is the thought that what we may be facing is an evolving new way in which harm can come to the public that piggybacks off of legitimate large-scale public protests. Public protests is as American as our, you know, as can be. It's what we do as a free people. And the thought that organized crime that cuts across state lines would then take advantage of that in order to do harm, that extreme ideological groups would travel across state lines, quite frankly, would travel from within our state. You know, we have several individuals who are under indictment for damage that caused in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, who are not residents of Minneapolis. They're residents of, quite frankly, greater Minnesota communities scattered across the state. We have an individual who's indicted right now by the U.S. Attorney General for traveling from Texas with a semi-automatic and firing into the third precinct. While it was set afire. So repeated fire, an individual who has documented social media contacts with other folks across the nation, some who have killed police officers, or at least are under indictment for having done that. You know, maybe it's a momentary aberration, members, but, you know, I have to tell you, you know, after watching the events on January 6th at our capital and steadily learning about some of the potential coordination that went into that across state lines, it could very well be that all our communities are facing the need to be able to modernize our responses and to do that through mutual aid agreements so that we can meet the scale of the threat. I think that's what's being presented here is a tool that will allow us to be able to do that. I think it's vitally important that we act on that and that we strengthen our responses and that we do it while simultaneously protecting those very, you know, American rights that we all have for freedom of speech.
With, thank you. Under normal circumstances, I will come back to Representative Neal, but our list is getting longer. So what I would like to do is allow at least the next four representatives to ask a question. If we have time, we'll come back. Okay? So I'm going to move on to Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank you, Chair Moran, for having this discussion and leaving a vote off the table right now. I think it certainly changed the tone and what we can accomplish today. If we're going to have consensus, I have many concerns. I have committed to speak with Chair Mariani. I think most of the discussion, most of the concerns I have would be more efficient for the sake of time of this committee. To bring him up right now is not important. I think when this comes to a vote, depending on what we accomplish with Chair Mariani, you know, there may be more to say in committee, but right now I want to be respectful of everyone's time. I do have a couple questions, two for Commissioner Harrington, then a quick one for Chair Mariani that I think would be helpful for that is outside that because Commissioner Harrington is here, it'd be helpful. And then to frame my thinking on my conversation and perhaps for others, if Carlos or Chair Mariani could answer them. So, Madam Chair, I just have two quick questions first for Commissioner Harrington.
Okay, go ahead, Representative Miller. Two quick questions.
Okay, they really are. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Harrington, I'm just asking for a couple quick statistics and I'll put them both on the table. What is the current strength of the Minneapolis police force in respect to what you would consider full strength being? And what has the change been with the Minneapolis police force in the last year in respect to that number?
Commissioner Harrington.
Madam Chair, Representative Miller, I can only tell you what I've seen in the paper. I don't have any greater insights into that. The last news report I saw said that they were down potentially as many as 200 officers, although I know that from Chief Arredondo that he is in the process of recruiting and hiring a class of officers to join the academy from one that was canceled from last year. So I can't give you an exact number, but I'm happy to check with Chief Arredondo and get information back for you and the committee. My understanding is that they have lost a significant number of folks to both retirement due to PTSD and also to to the budget, as there was, I believe, there was a cut to their budget, and so there were folks that left as part of the normal retirement cycle. But I would have to get more information from Chief Arredondo to be able to answer that question accurately.
Okay. Representative Miller, was that your two questions?
Yep. No, I still have a couple more things. I promise to be brief. But thank you, Commissioner Harrington. And please get that information to me or if the chief wants to talk directly. I'm not trying to set up any sort of like grandiose statement. I just, to Representative Petersburg point earlier, I just have a lot of concerns about how this bill relates to strength. And the reason why I asked Minneapolis is probably that's the easiest question. It's also, in my opinion, what's coming up in the next couple months is what brought forward this bill. And so I think it's very much an important context to discuss. And that's certainly some information that I'm going to want. Madam Chair, Chair Mariani, the question that I have is, as we're establishing a fund, and I guess my question is, why a fund that's set up as opposed to coming for reimbursement, either upon an event that's going on, something as great as what happened last summer, for example, or after if we have something that's deemed important. What my concern is, and I'd like an answer to that question, why a fund now as opposed to that model, but my concern is that there's a history and tradition in Minnesota government that when we have a fund, it's gone too quickly. And when in doubt, well, we have the money, so why don't we go ahead and do it? And so I certainly hope that the need for calling in, as you call it, emergency situations, I certainly would think that those are a pretty rare exception in Minnesota. If they're going to be accelerating, we have another issue that we have to discuss. So in my opinion, this fund is designed for that exceptional situation. We've certainly had multiple ones in the last year, but we hope that only happens once in a lifetime, what we've been seeing. So my concern is that if we develop this fund and it's annually funded, there's going to be a very quick reaction to bring in other forces, and decisions are going to be made based off of whether or not you have funding to make those decisions, which I think is a bad model. So Chair Mariani, why a fund as opposed to supporting either during a large event or after?
Yeah. Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran and Representative Miller, I sure do miss you on the Public Safety Committee, because these are kind of quality questions and pushing that you've done with the chair, which I think ultimately makes our decision-making better. So really good questions. A part of that also might be a commissioner response, but I do hope your hopes are correct that, you know, we're not dealing with, you know, constantly escalating large scale type of events. We seem to be in a period right now where that has happened with alarming frequency. But let me make a very quick gander at it. One is that, you know, given the financial stresses that all our public safety entities face, there is something to be said about a sense of confidence that as I, the sending jurisdiction, you know, smaller perhaps, you know, police department, will do the right thing because it's what I do as a professional, you know, public safety, and respond to a request for aid, that there is some comfort in knowing that those very real expenses are in fact going to be covered, that the framework within which that happens allows me, the sending entity, to be strongly at the table to help shape vital issues like, you know, the nature of the unified command, you know, for that circumstance, what my role is in that, this issue of indemnification, you know, that I know that I have some confidence that real liability costs can in fact be covered, understanding that perhaps the receiving jurisdiction is also facing, budgetary finances, et cetera. I also think very quickly that in terms of the ongoing nature of this, I think all the more important to have those twin expectations of having an audit review as part of any reimbursement mutual aid agreement, and also an after action review so that our practices can become ever efficient and better and smarter in terms of how we work with one another. But I think it's a great question. It also might be one that, whether now or later, should be posed, I believe, to our executive branch and Department of Public Safety to hear from their perspective on it.
All right. Thank you, Chair Mariani. Chair Pulaski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments are going to be in reference to several times the Chapter 12 Natural Disaster Contingency Account has been raised today by a group of individuals. This bill apparently mimics it. I'll go a step further. This bill not only mimics it, but in an unprecedented move, Governor Walz took approximately $12 million out of the Chapter 12 Natural Disaster Contingency Account for use in the things that Representative Mariani has brought up today. So we've got an account that has existed since 2014. That account has been used successfully in a number of disasters, natural disasters across the state. I had a hearing 2 weeks ago in the Industrial Education and Economic Development Finance Committee on this, and also on Senator Rosen's bill, Senate File 7, which would put language into Chapter 12B to say that account could not be accessed for civil unrest. I'm now the author of the companion bill for that, because my concern is The governor has taken $12 million out of that account. That account's down to less than $4 million. I want to remind members that in both 2019 and 2020, among the first five bills signed into law by Governor Walz in both of those years was an amount to replenish Chapter 12B because it had been drained by natural disasters. We're now in a similar situation, not because of the natural disasters, but because of the money that's been taken out of that account to address the concerns of the riots that occurred in Minnesota over the summer and into the fall. So this isn't so much a question, but it's a concern and a statement. Why aren't we replenishing that account simultaneously with addressing the concerns that are in the Mariani bill? That account should be at least as big a priority for us as the concerns that are in the Mariani bill. That account should be at approximately $30 million going into the spring, summer, and fall. It's now down to less than $4 million as a result of the $12 million that's been taken out. So I don't need Representative Mariani to address this. But Madam Chair, I think if this bill is to pass in whatever form, an appropriate amendment or a bill, which I have ready in the Industrial Education Committee to replenish this account, would be of equal importance to pass to the desk of the governor. So once again, one of the first bills signed by the governor would be to replenish Chapter 12B and the natural disaster account. That's my comment. If others wish to comment on it, I'd be open for questions.
Chair Pawlowski, thank you for reminding us about that and also the urgent need to make sure we have those dollars in that natural disaster fund for those moments when, you know, we need it. So I appreciate that question. That's a reminder and something for us to think about.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I don't think it's something for us to think about. I am making a statement here that if we're going to move forward with this brand new account and leave the current 12B account at under $4 million, I think you're going to be anticipating amendments coming up.
Yeah, and I did hear you state, Chair Pawlowski, that you have a bill that you may also bring forward. So,
Madam Chair, that bill has been heard. Madam Chair, that bill has been heard in my committee, was heard several weeks ago. Okay. Senator Rosen is the author of it in the Senate. We always put the bill in early to anticipate the need to replenish the account, and the account needs to be replenished.
So we have it moving through the body.
Awesome. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Awesome. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, a couple comments, and I do have a question for Commissioner Harrington as well. First off, it was brought up that we've never had riots or mutual aid issues like this before. They've been going on for a long time. I've been involved in a number of in my career in law enforcement, dealing with the netting issue up in the Mille Lacs tribal area when those lawsuits were going forward. And also at the civil unrest in the city of Mora, where I work for a different police department. But we went up there on mutual aid to assist. These things go on all the time. But the magnitude that Chapter 12 is invoked, it does not happen as often. They have happened in the city of Minneapolis and the St. Paul since the 1930s. Every decade or every other decade, we seem to have them. And Chapter 12 actually deals with that issue already in 12.33. I was wondering if Chief or Commissioner Harrington could address the fact of what 12.33 subdivision 3, why the city of if he knows, has any idea why the city of Minneapolis hasn't held up to the current state statutes where reimbursement by local government for receiving a system is required under a state statute when an emergency is declared, such as the one this past June.
Commissioner Harrington.
Chair Moran, Representative Johnson, I think I can answer that question. My understanding is that the city of Minneapolis needed to move funds out of one fund in Minneapolis and move it into the police department budget so that they could then, in fact, reimburse requests for Chapter 12C, and that fund has been recently done and that is in process now. So I believe that the city of Minneapolis it took time for them to make the move in their fiscal system to put the money where it needed to be to do that, and that they're now in a position to do that. But once again, that's a question, unfortunately, better posed to Chief Arredondo than it is to me. We are certainly cognizant of the fact I, like Representative Johnson, have dealt with riots and civil disturbances and protests throughout my career. And I certainly was not saying that there have not been riots or civil disturbances that have required multiple agencies to show up. What I was pointing to was that this kind of sustained period of time has been, I think, unusual. And it is not typical for in Minnesota law enforcement that we have this kind of event. And what is also unique here is that it is a planned event that we know about. And so this allows us to have a planful mutual aid response rather than simply responding to a emergency situation. So I think that is one of the other things that was different about why we were proposing this particular remedy. I will also say that we did recognize the deficiency that would occur, and that the governor does, I believe, have a deficiency request into the budget regarding the state emergency fund. So I believe that we are also very aware of the fact that we are going to need to replenish the state emergency fund as we move forward here.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chief or Commissioner Harrington. I know all these departments and stuff, we plan and have contingency funds with the work with emergency management and in our communities and with our neighboring departments. We are always planning these events. We prepare for the worst and hope for the best. These plans are always being modified at all times. I know I've talked to my sheriffs and a few sheriffs and police chiefs in my community and around the state. They have these plans in place at all times. So they are always preparing and adjusting their plans for trying to figure out what might happen. They're looking at the events that are going around across not only the state but across the country, and preparing if something should happen in their communities. The city of Minneapolis hasn't prepared for this in the past, they've had numerous events there. Shame on them, because their emergency management and their law enforcement's not doing their duties, and their city council's not doing the oversight they need. So thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Mariani will remember that I usually cut straight to the chase, so here's the chase. My fear and opposition to this is based on the fact that in consultation with many law enforcement agencies and based on my time as a mayor myself, when a mutual aid happens, there is a bill that gets generated. But my fear is this, that the purposeful decision by the Minneapolis City Council to not fund the police appropriately is going to effectively shift the actual staffing and policing of things to other law enforcement agencies, and is going to shift the bill to the outstate so that all taxpayers are paying for the policing in Minnesota, or in Minneapolis. I have grave concerns about that and tremendous opposition to this. And I just can't imagine how this provision would be brought forward in without having that part of the discussion brought forward. When they are planful and they talk about these things, they do set them up. In speaking to my own sheriff, they have discussed this. But when the taxpayer of Carver County is going to pay, if a large riot were to happen here in Carver County, there would be an expectation that the taxpayers would pay for that to whatever agency were to show up. They don't expect the state to bail them out. So I think this is a poorly designed bill and a poorly designed solution, and I can't support it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you, Chair Mariani, for this bill. I represent
South Minneapolis, the epicenter of everything that has happened this past summer. And it would be unjust for me to sit here and listen to people talk about fear and concern. Well, you know what real fear is? Real fear is when white supremacists from other states and greater Minnesota and suburban communities come to our community and burn our businesses to the ground. That's what real fear is. That's what real concern should be. Our concern should be, how do we keep people safe? I'll tell you this. My community in South Minneapolis has been for many months without grocery stores, without drug stores, without banks, without post offices, without gas stations. And we didn't do that to ourselves. And all I'm hearing is that, well, if Minneapolis can do things that they need to do, we're not responsible. Well, I'll ask you this question. How would you feel if every person not from Minneapolis, if we were to charge every member of other communities to their cities to pay us back for the damage that they have done to us? How fair would that be? I am really getting tired of listening to people demonize Minneapolis and demonize communities of color and indigenous communities who has done nothing. George Floyd was killed because of $20. What does that tell our communities when somebody's life was taken because of $20? And then when we rise up and try to stand up for justice, agitators from not from our communities come to our communities and burn our livelihood, businesses that are owned by Black, Indigenous, and communities of color, who are the livelihood of those neighborhoods. How do you think, do you ever like ask yourselves, how does the residents of Minneapolis feel? How does the BIPOC community in Minneapolis feel when justice is never served? And when the governor called the National Guard to keep us safe, the National Guard decided to shoot rubber bullets on journalists, on our community patrol members who were saving us, who were keeping us safe when white supremacists come to our community to destroy us. How do you think that we feel? I am sorry. I cannot sit here and listen to people talk about, oh, I'm concerned about this. Of course, it's a luxury for you to feel concerned about things that do not mean anything to you. What we're talking about is people's livelihood. What we're talking about, we don't feel safe from law enforcement, from white supremacists. We don't feel safe. I don't feel safe in my community. I don't know what's going to happen when the trial starts. What white supremacist group is going to show up in South Minneapolis and burn down so the others can just say that, oh, yeah, Minneapolis did this itself. I want to encourage you to have compassion and stop demonizing people that have been victims themselves. There has been trauma that's inflicted in my community over and over and over. And you right now are re-victimizing my community. So I encourage you, police members, to stop re-victimizing my community. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing that inside perspective into this conversation. Appreciate that. I want to remind members that we're going to go a little bit longer, but I want to stop at least by 10:30. And I also would like to remind us that we still have amendments to do. So before we get to this, I see Representative Neal and Chair Pulaski, who has questions. But before I get to you, be patient, please. I want to get to the amendments so that we can respond to that. So I know we do have a couple of amendments that have been brought forward. We have the A18 amendment. So the first was the author's amendment that I believe was that it's largely a technical amendment, Chair Mariani. Could you explain the A18 amendment for us?
Madam Chair, I'll need a second to pull it up.
Okay.
It shouldn't take me long, Carol. Madam Chair, I may need help from your House staff, but I think basically.
Okay. Do you see it, Carlos?
Yes, I do.
Chair Mariani, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, yes, I do. I may need some help from House staff, but I believe what this speaks to is the indemnification language. Page 3, line 4. Yeah, in the current indemnification language under this engrossment, the first engrossment, it reads as an eligible cost, indemnifying personnel from ascending jurisdiction, and then some qualifiers. This would delete personnel from the indemnification reach. It still leaves indemnification. So covering liability for sending jurisdiction. But I believe, I'm going to gander, but this is what I mean. I think I need some technical help.
Okay.
I believe when it comes to personnel issues of indemnification, you're now wandering into financial obligations that are covered through a variety of other mechanisms, primarily centered on the employment relationship between the individual officer or personnel and their jurisdiction. And so I'm gathering that broad language of identifying the personnel invites all sorts of technical problems, but I would certainly turn to if we have any House staff here, because this is a pretty specialized law, to comment on that.
So is there anyone from House? Is the House Research?
Madam Chair, this is Jeff Diebel from House Research. Okay. I worked on this amendment for Chair Mariani. The first part of the amendment was recommended by the League of Minnesota Cities to make it clear that the indemnification is for the entity that employs the personnel. So those would be the eligible costs that they could seek reimbursement for under the SAFE account, as opposed to re-indemnifying the individuals directly. And that, I was told by the League of Minnesota, is how the standard procedure works. You don't indemnify the personnel, you indemnify the entity that employs them. And then the second piece of that is, the amendment is to delete an appropriation to the post board related to the model policy. The post board, I believe, has informed the chair that they are able to absorb the costs of developing that model policy, and so that blank appropriation is no longer needed.
Okay, thank you. Members, do you have any questions on the A18 amendments? Okay. So why don't we move on? This is a GOP amendment. The other amendment we received was the A17. Representative Johnson, I believe this was your amendment. Would you like to explain it to the committee?
Chair Moran, members. This is an amendment to try to get the bill back in the way it was before the amendments when the law enforcement groups and the governor actually supported it. Goes back to the original form with some minor tweaks to it. One of the issues was it removes the state agencies from being able to eligible for the reimbursements. We have, in fact, earlier this year in special session, we actually reallocated more funds to the State Patrol and the DNR. It's a little over. Combined, I think it was between $12 and $13 million for reimbursements for those departments during the riots. So we, as a state, we should be using this funds for local jurisdictions and not to supplement the state's budget, because we have the ability to supplement that already. Where they don't, they set their budget before the year starts, and they have no way to really raise the funds through with tax increases or anything like that to cover those costs should they have a major incident. It also requires reimbursement to all the eligible sending jurisdictions prior to the receiving jurisdiction. All law enforcement is, the vast majority of law enforcement is paid for at the local level through property taxes. And when a major event comes, you know, in some areas, even one homicide can put a lot of stress on local law enforcement, their budgets, where a major event like this could actually, by sending them down there, not getting reimbursed, can put a lot of stress on the local budget. This way, the people sending their manpower down to assist, especially in wherever it is. It could be Minneapolis, could be St. Paul, could be Duluth, anywhere in the state. They get their reimbursed first before the receiving agency, who has to try to plan for these things. And the receiving agency, if they need to, they can come and ask the state for assistance through other sources at the next legislative session, should that need to be arise. Whereas legislatures, we can talk about it and decide if that on a case-by-case basis, should we need to assist that local government entity.
All right.
It also requires the Department of Public Safety Commissioner to wait until all eligible jurisdictions have applied, whether it's 30 days, 45 days, whatever he decides is the best, where then we can take all the bills, put them together, and if it's under that amount that's available, they all get paid out at 100%. But if the total cost comes above if it happens to be $35 million in there, it's prorated, so everybody gets an equal amount, equal percentage of what they did. And with the receiving jurisdiction, if there's anything left over, they can get up to 75%, still keeping that 75% in there. It also adds the requirement that Department of Public Safety Commissioner add a description to the public safety event in addition to the list of reimbursements and the amount, and requires reporting to the legislature, letting the chairs and the leads know what was sent out, know which departments and the amount that was sent out. It also does remove the things that were put in on the amendment in the Public Safety Committee. All the things that made the law enforcement groups no longer support this bill. It also gets it back much closer to what the governor had planned. And it allows for some accountability for receiving jurisdictions to plan and prepare and have a proper police force in place to handle most situations at this time. That's the basic stuff in the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Do any members have any questions on the A-17 amendment or comment? Okay.
Madam Chair, if I can just very brief.
Yes, Chair Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Johnson. Let me just say very quickly, there are a number of provisions in this amendment, which basically, to some degree, rewrites, you know, the entire bill. Mm-hmm. I would say, however, as I look through it, that I think there are a number of ideas here that from my perspective anyway, I think are certainly worth pursuing. Legislators are receiving detailed funding descriptions. I wish I had thought of that one. I think that's absolutely good. You know, the making sure that everyone gets paid in the order in which that happens, I think is objectively a good necessary conversation. I actually have one small provision that parallels yours in terms of eliminating the Pulse Board appropriation. We need to hear more, I think, from the executive branch relative to state agency reimbursement. And then the final thing I'll say very quickly is that I do think, and it was the very last comment about, you know, where the official law enforcement associations are, I do think it's a solid principle as a legislative branch that as we make decisions in distributing, appropriating the people's resources that come in, obviously in the form of tax dollars, always happen with a strong accountability mechanism. And so we'll talk more. This will be the sticking point, right? But I do think that holding our Pulse Board license peace officers to their own department's existing policies is not asking a whole lot. It is sending a really strong signal to the public that we're real serious about constantly connecting state resources with strong accountability measures. So I look forward to the conversation. I think there's room here for some agreement on a number of issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. So I think we have a couple of questions. Maybe we're going to respond to the amendments. Maybe. Let's start with Representative O'Neill.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So in my view, this amendment just simply does just a few things that are very important to me and I think very important to Republicans in the House. And that is, first of all, it is absolutely simple and clear that state agencies cannot use this fund. And I think that has been a discussion quite a lot here. We had had testimony again from Commissioner Harrington and Colonel Langer that they didn't have intention to use this fund, that they can do a deficiency budget request. They have other means. So I think it's absolutely vital that we don't mix up these two things, that we don't even give the option for state agencies to remove money from here to backfill their budgets. Another thing that it does is it makes crystal clear which expenses local law enforcement qualify for reimbursement. And Chair Mariani and I had gone back and forth a little bit about my concerns, and he wanted more clarity. So allow me to be crystal clear. My concern is starting on page 3. It's line 3.1 through 3.6. And in this amendment, it takes those provisions back out. What remains is that overtime costs are still paid for, food and lodging is still paid for, any incidental supplies that are necessary for the response, so in other words, PPE and any kind of equipment they need to buy, anything specialized that they need in order to respond, covered. Damages to equipment, covered. What isn't covered are things that I don't really understand what these mean, and that would be paragraph 6, specifically 3.1, through 3.4. The language is very broad. For example, it says costs associated with emergency management, response, and recovery planning. That could be a whole lot of different things, very unclear. Mitigation of public health threats posed by the public safety event, also incredibly unclear. I don't know whose expenses it's covering or what exactly it's covering. And it kind of goes on from there. So those are some very specific things that I have issues with in the underlying language that got added. Another thing, this also prioritizes that law enforcement agencies who are sending in officers, that they are prioritized. So those agencies that sacrificed their people and operations back in their home districts are sending in officers, they get the priority. I think that's fair and equitable. I think it fairly distributes the reimbursements. And so if it's a $35 million fund and you have $37 million of expenses, you appropriate it across the agencies that are responding. So it is fair for all of the agencies. They all, instead of you know, get your information in quickly, and then first in gets their money and everybody else doesn't get anything. That is unfair. So this fairly distributes the reimbursement. And finally, as Chair Mariani pointed out, it does require a report back to the legislature, which I think is incredibly important. So those are the components of the amendment, and that is why we believe that these are incredibly important. And we would ask for your support if we actually come to a vote at some point on this amendment, because I think there is agreement that we could have in these 5 points that I just offered.
Okay. I think Representative Garofalo also would like to respond to the amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, but I don't want to cut in line ahead of Representative Pawlowski. I see he had his hand up before me, so
yeah.
I'll go after him.
Chair Pawlowski, to the bill, to the amendment. Bill, go.
My comments are not to the amendment, but to the bill and to comments made by the administration.
Okay.
All right. Do you want those now?
Yeah, why don't we have Representative Garofalo to the amendment, and then we'll come back to Chair Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my first question is to nonpartisan research. I just want to make sure that I'm clear about this. The language as it is written right now, without any amendments, would this apply exclusively to the potential court cases in the Twin Cities, or would it also be, could it be used for reimbursement for the Line 3 protests in northern Minnesota? Nonpartisan research could give us their analysis on that.
Okay, to nonpartisan researchers, please go ahead. What do we have?
Madam Chair, this is Jeff Diebel. Could the representative repeat the question?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Diebel, right now there's been a focus on the upcoming court cases and law enforcement response for that. Could this fund, if signed into law the way it is right now, could it be used to reimburse for the security costs on the Line 3 replacement project in northern Minnesota?
So, Mr. Diebel?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe that it's contingent upon being a declaration, an emergency declared, is one of the requirements for the fund to be triggered.
Representative Garofalo.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Diebel, aren't we under an emergency right now? Isn't that what the requirements, because we've been under a state of emergency for 11 months. Wouldn't that requirement be met?
Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair, I'd have to perhaps defer to one of my colleagues on how far the scope of the emergency would extend, if it would, if the statewide emergency is specific to the event, or is it solely the state of emergency that would trigger the reimbursement?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Mr. Diebel, it may be, we don't need to discuss this now since we're not voting on it, but perhaps if there would be, if we could just have staff email out to the committee the answer to that question, if because there are obviously significant law enforcement costs that are occurring right now across northern Minnesota in these rural jurisdictions, and whether whether the mutual aid up there, if that's the sort of thing that would be, we could be assisted in. So that would be can we have nonpartisan research, whenever they get a chance, email that out to us sometime this week?
Mr. Diebel?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll work with my colleagues and we'll try to find a clear answer to that question.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Okay. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then, my next questions are for Representative Mariani. And Representative Mariani, thank you for, you know, carrying this bill. And obviously, Representative Johnson and Representative O'Neill have articulated some of the concerns we have with the bill in crafting the A-17 amendment. From this member's perspective, it seems like this is the way the bill is going to exist in its final state, that we can go through the song and dance of conflict and fighting. The bill can go to conference committee or get negotiated by leadership, but this is going to be the end result. The principles that Representative Johnson and O'Neill have laid out in the A-17 amendment addresses most of those concerns. Can you express for me, like, when I look at the AC 17 amendment, it seems like this is a pathway to resolve this issue. Can you highlight any concerns you have with the A 17 amendment?
Chair Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. First of all, as I indicated, I'm doing a very quick, response. I think there are a number of points here that are quite doable in terms of arriving at a comfortable, place of agreement. Devil's always going to be the details, but that's what conversations and negotiations are going to be about. I do think, to answer your question directly in terms of, what would be a stumbling block, I do think that jettisoning the principle that that our post-licensed individuals or state licensed individuals should be held accountable to their own state, their own department's policies relative to public assembly is a would be a tragic thing for us to do. I don't see a conflict, frankly, between public safety and First Amendment protections. I think it goes to the heart of who we are as a people. I don't know why, frankly, we would jettison that idea. There certainly could have been, and believe me, the bills are stacked up. There's certainly a number of proposals that are floating around that speak to this issue of police accountability. I actually have empathy with a lot of them, but I also know that those are incredibly controversial and should stand on their own and have their, a debate. And so what this chair did was to find a place that had a very strong posture on the part of the state that we take our jobs seriously when it comes to protecting our state constitutional rights and that we expect all our agents to be held accountable for those. I suppose, again, this is what negotiations, discussions are about. We could find different ways to say that, but to totally walk away from that, that core principle, I don't know why we would send the opposite message to the people of Minnesota. So that's where, that's where, apparently there's a sticking point. I reached out early to our law association groups, shared with them the language days before our hearing. My policy has always been to work openly, and I'll continue to do that. I have yet to hear a cogent argument on why the state would not assert holding its licensed agents to account for ensuring that that First Amendment rights are protected. We're not reaching way out there, man. Public assembly policing is at the core of many individual department policies. And so I think there's probably room for some good agreement going forward if people come to the table with a willingness to agree to that principle. But I appreciate the question. I appreciate the pushing and the prodding. And I fully suspect that it's based on a common interest that we have to make sure that we do all we can to make sure that people in Minnesota are free from harm.
And Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, so to be clear, the A-17 amendment, it's a lot more than just that one issue you highlighted. I guess I wanted to zero in. I read the Johnson-O'Neill language as this is how we get focused on doing our jobs. We eliminate the fighting and get things done. That's how I see this. My question for you was, what parts of the A-17 amendment are problematic for you? Now, you mentioned the one the one issue there. Is there anything else in the A-17 amendment that is, from your perspective, problematic? Because from what I've heard from you so far, I don't really hear anything that would merit us blocking the A-17 amendment. I hear pass the A-17 amendment eventually. Let's pass this bill and get it done. What other parts of the A-17 amendment are you opposed to? Or should I say stakeholders, people in the DFL or you personally are opposed to?
Chair Mariani, quickly.
Madam Chair, I represent Garofalo. I think there are a lot of Minnesotans who have concerns over the rejection of law officers being held under code of conduct to meet their own policy, their own department's policies on First Amendment public assembly. That's not just the DFL. I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think it's about as American as it gets. But I would say directly to your question, this whole area of the bill that speaks to the model policy, to the use of the code of conduct, it's important that we have progress in that area. I think all the other areas are, boy, I think they're pretty, open. I do think there's a small provision here that has to do with denying our own commissioner of public safety to observe the policing of a public assembly. I don't know why that should be part of this amendment. It's only observing. It's only the ability to offer advice. I suspect people in the field would want to do that. We could talk about, the details around the eligible costs. Representative O'Neill raised the issue around quote-unquote broad language with public health. I think we should not lightly dismiss that. And so I look forward to perhaps a way to sharpen that particular language. So those are three, four areas specifically. I don't feel, that it's daunting. And so I look forward to, continuing the conversation.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, closing for this section of the conversation. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not hearing anything that rises to the level of blocking this amendment or blocking this funding. I'll be candid that I thought that my colleagues in the Senate's response last week, by having them say, well, this money's going to come out of Minneapolis's LGA, I didn't think that was responsible. That certainly doesn't speak to my opinion, and I don't think it speaks to a majority of House Republicans either, although I'm not really authorized to make that statement. But likewise, I don't think the items that Representative Mariani has highlighted merit blocking this bill or delaying passage. It's very common for each of us to want to attach things or change things that we find to be reasonable to appropriations items. It's not like I invented it or Representative Mariani did. Something we've done. We heard earlier today how the Senate was trying to attach other things to Representative Hansen's bill. But in this case, in this situation, I think it's in all of our best interests to pass the appropriation funding in an accountable way. This is not only going to be a local event. These trials are going to be an international event. And our state has experienced enough brand damage from the events over the last year. The least we can do is make sure we have these resources in place to make sure we keep the peace. So my understanding is there's some leadership conversations happening on later tonight. I hope people interpret the Johnson and O'Neill language on the A-17 amendment as a way to kind of turn down the volume and move us forward and get things done. That benefits all of us. We got plenty of stuff to fight over. There's a long list of things we can fight over. We don't, this doesn't need to be one of them, and I would hope that I feel like the A-17 language, the amendment, is going to be incorporated into this bill when it gets passed. It's just a matter of whether we do it in committee, do it on the House floor, or do it after a lengthy leadership negotiation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. This is exactly why this is an informational hearing. Give us an opportunity to, for Representative Johnson, O'Neill, and yourself, to have further conversation with Chair Mariani, because we would like for this to be a bipartisan bill that moves out of the House chamber. So I'm sure Chair Mariani looks forward to further conversations. Chair Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the administration, since this is the Ways and Means Committee, the Numbers Committee, would the administration tell the committee how they are funding the Chapter 12B account? And then once they're done giving us the numbers, I would like to make an observation.
Okay. Can we get House Research? Can you help us out here?
Nonpartisan. Madam Chair, this is Colby in House Research.
Yes.
If I heard the question correctly, I think it was maybe for the administration about the funding of the disaster assistance contingency account.
Okay.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Would that be Commissioner Harrington?
Madam Chair, it is me. I was trying to find the unmute button. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Chair Moran, Representative Pawlowski, my understanding is that the administration has put forward a request for a $15 million addition for deficiency, and then $25 million would be appropriated for the next biennium from the general fund.
Madam Chair, a $15 million deficiency barely covers the amount of money that has been taken out of that fund for the very things we're talking about in the Mariani bill. Then they move the real supplemental funding to the next year. So the account is still woefully underfunded. I'm going to remind everyone that in 2019 and 2020, among the first bills signed by the governor were the refilling of the Chapter 12B contingency account, $30 million each time. Now it's under $4 million. If the Mariani bill does not pass, and because of the actions taken by this administration, we now have Chapter 12B as not only for natural disasters, but for civil unrest. So the governor puts $35 million in the Mariani bill for civil unrest, and yet woefully underfunds the Chapter 12B account, which has demonstrated since 2014 the amount of money needed in that account and how we should fund it at the beginning of session. So, Madam Chair, we are in a dilemma here. The Mariani bill creates two problems for us, the problems he outlines, and then the problems that have been created in Chapter 12B as a result of the administration taking $12 million out of the account. I just want to make that observation, Madam Chair, for the committee and the state. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pawlowski, for helping us to get some clarity around that. And I know you had an informational hearing, and so why don't we try to find a way that we can get that bill moving so that we can get it here in Ways and Means and to the floor.
Madam Chair, I can get it moving Wednesday.
Okay, let's do that.
Madam Chair, I think we'll have a discussion as to whether or not we're going to do it, but I'm open to doing it.
Okay.
And that bill is $30 million, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, members, I just want to thank you all for this discussion on this bill today. Around the bill in general, around all the amendments. And my hope is that we can do a little bit more work offline and bring this back to the committee soon. But for now, the chair will lay a House File 445 over. And so with that, members, that will conclude our business for the day. Thank you again for your flexibility in meeting early. Please keep an eye out for additional hearing notices for now. And staff will provide more details as they become available. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.